This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Time now for our Africa update. This week, more than 40 African leaders call for free, fair, and peaceful elections in Zimbabwe. Plus, we look at Somalia in crisis. For more, we've got Roxanne Lawson. She is Director of Africa Policy for Trans-Africa Forum. Hi, Roxanne.
Hi, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Let's talk about this runoff election scheduled for next week in Zimbabwe. 40 African leaders signed an open letter calling for Zimbabwe's presidential runoff to be peaceful and fair. We're talking about 18 former presidents or prime ministers, two Nobel laureates, musician Yusu Ndour, who's also an activist, and Archbishop Desmond Tutu. This as President Mugabe threatens to go to war if the opposition party wins the runoff. So last week I spoke with Morgan Tsvangirai, the opposition leader, who had this to say about Robert Mugabe.
For me, I think that the first decade of independence, Robert Mugabe was my hero. I think he deteriorated, and I don't know what has made him to transform from a hero to a villain, and now to a real tyrant, and I think it's very unfortunate.
What are you hearing from Zimbabweans about the runoff election and what they expect from it?
I'm hearing exactly, I think, what the African leaders in their recent statement have said quite loudly. Zimbabweans on the ground, civil society, is adamant in wanting a free and fair election at the end of next week. They want the ability to be able to vote. I heard from one of my colleagues there that even if Zimbabweans have to crawl to the ballot boxes, they will be there and they will cast their ballots.
We also spoke with opposition leader Tsvangirai about the violence that some of his supporters have gone through, including some who have died, some who have been beaten. And he spoke about the young people who one person said, "I can't wait to get better so I can go vote." Do you think that people who are under physical duress will still put themselves at risk if that's what it takes?
I think they will and they have. I mean, so many members of civil society in Zimbabwe have not left the country. They decided to stay there to fight. They want to safeguard their democracy. They want to try to create a government that reflects them and their values. And I think that's really important. I think that they are very much taking up the mantle of their parents and grandparents who waged a liberation struggle. And they are resolute also that they are not going to just that a vote for the opposition is not just a vote for a vote against Mugabe, but rather is a vote for something in the future. And that they also will be just as vigilant if the government changes, vigilant in watching their new government and making sure that they actually uphold their values.
What about the reports that Robert Mugabe is calling for war? Should that be taken as grandstanding or a serious threat?
I think there are elements of a serious threat in what Robert Mugabe has said. I think that if you look at the government right now in Zimbabwe, the ZANU-PF government, the way in which they've positioned themselves quite strategically in the last couple of weeks, the removing of international aid workers from rural areas in Zimbabwe not only cuts off food aid to some opposition members, but it also actually takes away international witnesses to any kind of crimes that may happen in those areas. I think that that, as well as the kind of arming of the police, of forcing, I think, younger people in the police and military and older people to vote in a certain way as they did those away ballots last week, all of those things point toward a very strategic and very purposeful stance that actually is the beginning of a quiet warfare.
I want to move on to East Africa. Conditions in Somalia are getting worse. Violence has increased dramatically since a UN peace agreement was signed last week between insurgents and the government. Now, this agreement calls for a 3-month truce and the withdrawal of Ethiopian troops after a sizable force of UN peacekeepers are deployed in Somalia. Do you think that that plan, that truce, is going to work and hold?
Well, I think already it hasn't worked and held. I think part of the problem is, you know, the rampant number of arms that are in Somalia right now in the hands of both government supporting the opposition. And that's really very problematic. And 80% of the arms that are in Somalia have come from the Somali government, the transitional federal government. And many of those arms have come from Ethiopia and from the U.S. via Ethiopia. I think that's shown us that actually this ceasefire may not work. I think also the sticking point is that the need for the African Union to be able to deploy more troops in our currently on the ground. Right now, only about 2,500 troops from Uganda and Rwanda are on the ground in Somalia, and those numbers need to grow exponentially.
Who should be on the ground? I mean, there are some who don't want UN troops. There's the Ethiopians. There's the aid workers. Who should be there, you think?
I think that the AU is right, that AU troops need to be on the ground to help try to restore some of the peace.
That's African Union.
African Union, thank you. I think also The aid workers need to be there. I mean, right now, Somalia may in the next 4 months see an increase of 1 million people who are both displaced and starving. And I think that for those reasons alone, there needs to be created a safety enough for really important international aid organizations to be able to operate on the ground. It's unfortunate that right now those conditions do not exist in Somalia.
The African Union has offered troops in many situations, but it's also been viewed as highly underfunded, and the troops themselves often are at risk. Is there enough of a heft to the African Union's ability to go into places like this and do it relatively safely and relatively well?
I don't think there is right now, unfortunately. I think the international community, despite their promises to both aid and train African Union forces and then to support them materially, have not come through. I think that's part of the problem that we see with crises around the African continent, that goodwill may exist, but the political and financial will does not back it up. I think right now the only kind of troops that could bring any kind of peace to Somalia would be from the African Union. Any other, I think even UN troops actually might be seen, as many people in Somalia, as just an extension of Westerners and global North countries bidding in Somalia. I think the role that the United States government has played in Somalia, both in the last 18 months as well as historically over the last 19 years, has proven that when international troops who come from other parts of the world are in Somalia, it means very bad things for Somalis.
Let's move on to another question of accountability. There's a new report by the Africa Commission. It says the continent faces an aid shortage of $40 billion. That commission was set up in 2005 by then British Prime Minister Tony Blair, and it was an idea that African countries would work to improve democracy. The West would double aid by 2010. And he says some Western countries, Blair this is, are failing to meet their pledges, but he didn't call anyone out by name. Is that strategy of saying, in general, this is not happening, is that going to work?
I think not. I think that these countries actually need to be named so that they have a little bit of shame. I mean, we're very fond, and I'll name some of them, the United States, Canada, France, for example, all of whom have promised large amounts of aid money, who are benefiting from the payment of debt servicing that African countries are doing, who are making actually money off of the poverty of Africans, and yet cannot, despite their goodwill and their press conferences, actually appropriate money to do things like support democratization processes, governance, and troops on the ground on the continent.
We talk a lot about the problems on the continent, but there are also, you know, even in this report, some signs of good things. The number of people living in poverty leveled off after the past few years. Child mortality rates declined. As far as those good things are concerned, what can we point to in terms of programs or approaches that are working?
I think that, you know, a couple of years ago, Thabo Mbeki talked about an African renaissance. I think that's actually really truly happening across the continent. We see civil society all over the continent growing and strengthening with real demands and holding governments accountable. I think all of those things are success stories. I think that unfortunately, internationally, global North countries, countries that are part of, you know, what we continue like kind of the G8 countries, the wealthiest countries in the world, the U.S., Canada, Britain, etc., have not done enough actually to really support goodwill on the continent. I think that there's been a huge success within international debt cancellation movements, which has freed up lots of money on the continent for governments and civil society to be able to support their citizens. And that's actually, I think, part of the reason that things like poverty are leveling off. I think that there's a resurgence in actually between Africa, inter-African investment and development. I think those things should be applauded.
Do you think that who are the economic engines right now besides, say, South Africa, which is, you know, well tied to developed economies?
I think that Nigeria shows itself at times to be an economic engine. I think that there are actually, you know, within the regional groupings, there are really strong, there's workings that's very quite strong. I mean, despite the violence that was in Kenya this January, I think that the East African community that exists between Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda, Rwanda, etc., is showing itself to be quite an economic powerhouse for that region and able to bring some stability. I think that across the board, though, what we see is actually a questioning of the economic policies right now that are pervasive around the world. This policy of neoliberalism is being questioned. And so African governments are trying to find an alternative to that because they've seen over the last 20 years the way in which neoliberalism has impoverished their citizens. And so I think that's part of the reason that the yardstick we're using to measure success, as it were, on the continent doesn't quite measure up to Western standards, because they're actually trying to change that yardstick.
Roxanne, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Roxanne Lawson is Director of Africa Policy for Trans-Africa Forum. She was at our headquarters in Washington, D.C.